If you've ever had anxiety, which I think most humans have experienced, then you know how frustrating it is when someone tries to tell you to calm down and then they try to tell you to relax or take a deep breath. You just want to yell at them. Like, don't you think I tried that already? It doesn't work. And then you start to feel even more anxious since you get this feeling that you're incompetent. Or you start to feel embarrassed, like you're wrong for feeling anxious in the first place. Guess what? I've been there and I totally understand where you're coming from. And that is why you're going to want to keep listening to the rest of this episode. Welcome to the series Guidance Grove, where experts, educators, and advocates share insights to help us along our healing journeys. Today, we will hear from licensed therapist Gabrielle Gonzalez. I first found Gabby on Instagram about 2 years ago. Whether she knows it or not, she has been a great online mentor to me, and I knew I had to invite her to the podcast. Gabby believes that when it comes to anxiety, we need to stop telling others and ourselves that our anxious feelings are something we need to fix or get rid of. You will never find Gabby telling her anxious clients to calm down or take a deep breath. She knows that is not helpful. Let's find out how we can approach anxiety in a productive and empowered way.
Welcome to the Streets of Our Lives, where we explore the journeys of our past, present, and future. Not the literal streets, but the paths we walked to find healing, acceptance, and inner freedom. Join us as we walk together on this journey of hope and inspiration.
Has this ever happened to you where you're anxious and you're sharing your worries with a friend or family member and they try to console you by telling you, everything is going to be okay. Don't worry. Just relax. Let me ask you, does that actually work? Do you trust them and automatically calm down and stop worrying? My guess is that you're just as anxious as you were before. Maybe you try to change your demeanor or your facial expression and pretend you're more relaxed to kind of appease your loved one, but deep down, you think to yourself, how do they know everything will be okay?
I am so anti everything's going to be okay, right? Like, quote, everything will be okay, end quote. Because the truth of the matter is we just don't know that, period. We don't know that. And anxiety knows we don't know that. We can neither predict that things are going to be all right, things aren't going to be all right. I am very against using that to help someone navigate through some legitimate fear and worry, through human nature. It's a little gaslighty, I think, right? It's trying to get somebody to calm down and just, everything's going to be okay. It's not that big of a deal. But what if it is?
Look, I am not completely innocent here. I know I've been around an anxious loved one and have tried to console them like this before. Why? Well, yes, partly it's because I care for them and I want them to be less stressed out. But I have to admit something. The main reason I'm trying to console them is because I don't know what to do with their anxiety. Them feeling anxious kind of makes me feel uneasy. So I end up trying to get them to relax so I can feel at ease. I brought this up to Gabby to get her thoughts on this and asked her if this is something she sees in relationships.
What comes to mind for me is the whole concept of emotional boundaries. And sometimes, you know, many of us human beings are lacking in those boundaries. So we're really, really, really influenced by what other people around us are feeling. We become sometimes, especially people who themselves have a propensity for anxiety, become hyperfixated on what the other person is going through. And they almost feel like, well, I'm not going to be able to have any chill until you have some chill. So I need to get you to be chill so I can feel chill. And that's not the only way to go about it, right? The thing is, we just become really focused. That's where the attention goes. If we can learn how to sort of split our attention or redirect our attention, and we can find ways to really ground ourselves in the presence of someone who's emoting, then that in itself might be the thing that helps somebody else, the person emoting, to calm down. If I am really going through it, I'm super anxious, I'm panicky, and I'm expressing that to someone, and then they maintain just a really composed demeanor and expression, and all they do is bear witness to my suffering and say something along the lines of, I'm here for you in this. I'm here for you right now. And then just sort of models that stability and centeredness, that's going to deactivate the alarm in the anxious person's survival brain. That's going to do it. Instead, though, a lot of the time what we do is we're trying to force it. We're trying to force it to stop. We're trying to force the feelings away. And so it's well-intended. I get it. It's not going to work, though, because when we try to force an emotion away, we just keep attacking parts of the anxious person that need not to be attacked, but need to be seen and, like you said, accepted. But when we're telling somebody to, like, just take a deep breath, just let it go, we're doing a few things. I mean, for one, we're making them, we're sort of making it into a situation where the person is out of control or something abnormal is happening here. Something abnormal is happening that we need to fix. But what if it's just human? What if it's just human and we accept that and we demonstrate, I accept you? Might that emotional person calm down?
I'm not sure about you, but I felt simultaneously called out by what Gabby said, and I also felt totally seen. I realized that I don't want someone to fix me when I'm feeling anxious and sharing my worries with them. I just want to be listened to. I just want a safe place to let it out. This means that I, too, should be a listening ear to someone else who's letting out their worries with me and not try to fix the situation. I'm not sure if you noticed, but Gabby used the word emoting. Maybe you're more well-read and well-spoken than I am, but I had never heard that word before. I asked Gabby what it meant.
Well, it's really just expressing emotion, you know, demonstrating what you're feeling on the inside, on the outside. Somebody would be emoting if they're crying, right? They're demonstrating their sadness, right? Because somebody can feel emotional and not emote. Somebody can have the experience internally, but not actually express it externally. And that's the thing that many of us in our upbringings learn not to do. We learned when emotional not to emote for a variety of different reasons.
So I looked up the word emote online, and when used by those in the psychology field, they are referring to the expression of emotions through nonverbal communication. It includes facial expressions, body language, tone of voice, and other nonverbal cues. So it makes sense when Gabby explained that someone can internally feel an emotion, but not display it outwardly. You know what's also interesting? The word emote apparently is also used in the acting world. Actors are trained to emote. That is, they are trained to portray emotions in a theatrical manner. Why am I even bringing this up to you right now? Well, during my conversation with Gabby, I found out that before she decided to become a therapist, she was originally a theater major. She has shared with me that she has loved acting ever since she was really young. I know this episode is not about acting, but I promise you, you don't want to skip this part. It will all make sense and tie back into the main point of this episode. Trust me.
It's interesting how many former drama kids became therapists as adults. I noticed amongst kind of my peer group of, you know, people I went to high school with and people I went to college with, many of us actually went into the field of mental health.
I was intrigued when Gabby shared that, So I asked her to dive deeper into her theater background and how it has helped her as a therapist today.
But when it comes to the theater stuff, what's interesting is what I really learned from that experience was the whole listening and reacting and the whole concept of connectedness and presence and observation of what's happening with this person in front of me, what's happening with their body and their expression. And so you learn to become really attuned to body language, to vocal inflections, to even really subtle changes that might happen on the face. Like recently, I was in a session with somebody and they didn't say anything, but I said in a moment of silence between us, "Something's coming up right now. Tell me about what just came up for you. You're experiencing a surge of emotion in this moment." And she was like, "How do you know that?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, there was like a little inch by inch piece of your face under your left eye that kind of twitched and moved upward to the side. And I could tell that was an indication like something just came up for you." And indeed, something had. So because as actors, we had to learn how to even recreate sensory experiences when the environment might not be inducing the sensory experience. So we have to learn how to, you know, recreate feelings of like being cold and like shivering on a stage that's 75 degrees, right? We may have to experience an ache in the leg and a limp from an injury that occurred that didn't actually occur. So there's a lot of learning that you do with your body. And I think it's why I went down the route of becoming a somatic-based therapist, because it's a skill I learned ever since I was a teenager, was being attuned to my body and to the body of somebody else across from me.
Maybe this all sounds so obvious to you, but I know I felt like my mind was blown when she shared that with me. I was never involved in theater, so I never realized just how in touch actors had to be with their bodies. But when you think about it, it makes sense. When you watch a dramatic scene in a movie where a character is injured, the actor really does seem like they are physically hurt, which we know they're not.
As you speak about it, it gives me chills because you're right. We learn, you know, in the field of acting, how to evoke emotion through the body, right? So if, you know, I'm acting a certain role, yes, I could probably think about that character's story and, you know, think about the story until I'm able to feel something about it. That's probably going to take a lot longer and a lot more force and a lot more work than actually digging into the body and maybe even recalling when in my life have I experienced an emotion similar to this one and what did that feel like for me in my body and how can I reposition or how can I engage my muscles or how can I engage my voice and my breath and my movement in order to recreate an experience like that. And then in order to evoke emotion so I can express it.
While she recognizes how powerful her theater experience was in guiding her to become a therapist, Gabby does make an important distinction between intentionally evoking an emotion versus unconsciously experiencing emotions.
What I did want to say just on that topic too is that actors, they're doing it with intention, right? I am intentionally recalling a time during which I experienced something similar to this emotion or this, you know, whatever, right? Physical experience. And so then recreating it. But we, in our just day-to-day lives, our bodies are responding on autopilot and unconsciously to our daily stressors. And oftentimes we're not even aware that that's happening. But there is this interaction between my environment and the things that I'm going through and my body. But most of the time it's happening automatically and unconsciously. And I think the really powerful thing to know is when we can notice it happening, oh, my body is having an emotional reaction right now. And it's kind of starting this whole loop back and forth between brain and body, right? body is triggered, brain gets triggered, triggers body further, triggers brain further. Then we might be able to accompany that discomfort with another emotion. So while there might be this like tension in my core, maybe I can create a softness in my shoulders and a softness in my jaw. And then maybe that helps to soften my abdomen as well. And so now it's not that I'm trying to force away the tension or the insecurity or the anxiety, but I am welcoming in softness and acceptance and compassion to sort of wrap itself around the anxiety.
When Gabby and I had our recorded conversation, I wanted to share with her how I had been working towards recognizing anxious feelings and accepting them, like she spoke about before. I'm going to let you listen in on what I shared with her when we had our conversation.
I think it was last year sometime, maybe a year and a half ago, I don't know, but I have the video somewhere. I could sense I was cooking. I was cutting up some avocados. I could sense myself like, this feeling feels like in the past. Like it just kind of randomly came up. I'm like, this feels like in the past when I've had panic attacks. Like I'm just kind of like, I just kind of sensed like, oh, this is kind of feels like the beginning of like a panic attack. And so I recognize it. I stop myself. I like verbalize it either out loud under my breath or just like in my brain, right? In my mind. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. This is what, you know, this is. And if it turns into something more, it just is what it is. But like, I'm going to do something that I know typically helps me when I'm feeling anxious. So like, I talk to myself nicely. I'm like, it's okay. You know, this is normal. This is what it is. And then I put on some Linkin Park and I like put my avocado on the side and I just like, I was in the kitchen and I was like, you know what? Like I was at a point where it wasn't that strong. So I was like, you know what? This could be like a good learning, teaching moment or something for me to look back on. So like, I just quickly like turned my camera on. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just see like what happens, right? Let's just record this. Let's see. And I'm like, I just start headbanging and like put my hand in the air and I'm just like, oh, and jumping. Then I start jumping. I was like, you know what? Maybe my body just wants to let something out right now. Instead of trying to hold it in and get afraid of it, like, no, don't come out. Don't come out. And then start hyperventilating and fucking crying, right? I'm like, no, I'm just going to feel, let's just accept it and be cool. And let's love whatever needs to come out. And let's just freaking rock with it. And totally helped. It didn't turn into a full blown panic attack. Like, and I was so proud of myself afterwards.
That is amazing. You know what I love? That you didn't try to analyze why you were feeling that way. You didn't require any kind of answer to then, you know, go forth and turn on Linkin Park and headbang. Like you just, I have a feeling, I will do this thing. Instead of, I have a feeling, what's that about? Where is this coming from? Why is this happening? And that's oftentimes what can make a person spiral and just make it so much worse and create all kinds of other issues. So I am so proud of you. I think that's incredible. Sometimes that really is it. You know, we never have to explain why we're happy. We never have to really analyze why we're happy. If we're happy, we feel happy and we embody that shit, right? But then when we feel anxious, we're like, oh, why? What's happening? What, you know? And there's this need to sort of analyze or understand the root of the feeling. But the root of it, I think, oftentimes is just because you're a human being. You're a human being. You've been through a lot of shit, like we all have. We're human beings living life. We're gonna have feelings. We're gonna have random like surges of panic because this world is crazy. So, you know, dance it out, headbang it out, you know, shake it out. And if that makes you feel better, then it made you feel better. And then you can carry on and keep cutting your avocados.
That is such a great point, right? We don't analyze when we feel all bright like a ball of sunshine. We just express it and go with that energy. I never thought of that before. Let's just take a pause to thank Gabby for reminding us that we are humans who feel different emotions and that we shouldn't be overanalyzing every feeling that comes up. With that said, I did ask her if she thinks it's okay to reflect, dissect, or analyze afterward. And this is what she said.
You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with Lena LaRue. I hope you're enjoying this episode today. If you are, you would be making a difference to the future of this show by becoming a supporter. You can support the show for free by leaving a review on your favorite podcast app or by sharing the podcast with your online friends. Another way to support the podcast is by leaving a small donation, even as small as just $5. And the last option to show your support not only benefits the show, but it benefits you directly. I currently have a collection of journals that you can purchase from that will support you along your own journey. I will leave links in the description if you want to support in any one of these ways. Thank you for being a part of the growth of this podcast. Now, back to today's episode.
Absolutely. The whole reason we wouldn't want to analyze in the moment that we're actively anxious or depressed even, right, is because we'd be trying to utilize the frontal cortex when there's a disconnect occurring between the frontal cortex, the rational thinking brain, and then our survival brain. We'll talk specifically anxiety, right? When a person is anxious, what that means is that their amygdala is signaling the rest of the limbic system, right? The alarm has been triggered. And so when that happens, survival brain takes over. And yes, we are still capable of thinking thoughts. We're still capable of trying to analyze, but it's not going to be super effective because we're not regulated. And if we're not regulated, the limbic system believes it has to take over. It's going to put you into fight, flight, freeze, right? But for many people, fight mode actually looks like analyzing and trying to find an answer. So if you're relentlessly, you know, analyzing through something, ruminating on something, trying to like pinpoint what's the root, what's the issue, what do I do about it, trying to constantly problem solve, that actually might be an indication that your fight mode has been initiated because the survival brain's alarm has been triggered. So yeah, when you can shake it out, dance it out, give your body an opportunity to sort of complete its stress cycle, right? And then you can re-engage with your parasympathetic nervous system, your rest and digest, right? When that becomes activated again, now you're able to effectively access your rational thinking brain. Now you can take a seat with your journal and sort of write it out. Now you can reflect on the day and ask like, okay, what did happen today? What things might I have not been aware of that were kind of getting at my unconscious brain and triggering me emotionally without me having realized? We just have to be aware of how am I actually feeling right now emotionally and physically? And is there maybe any indication that I'm actually dysregulated? If so, this is not the time. This is not the time. Instead, this is the time for me to label what's happening. So what that could look like, actually, I'll give you an example for myself. Yesterday, I was driving and I was super stuck in my head. Granted, I was just singing along to a song and like dancing. And then I started to analyze, why is it I'm okay right now, but earlier I wasn't okay? What's going on with me, right? And I realized, oh, I'm feeling tense. I'm not breathing. I'm all worked up in my body. So instead of analyzing, I labeled, remembering, questioning, imagining, right? I start naming what my brain is doing, not just what my brain is saying, and then building on the story of what it's saying, right? Why am I okay now, but I wasn't okay earlier? That's questioning. So label, my brain is asking questions, right? So anyway, when we're able to label and slow ourselves down, then we can label, detach, and then connect to our bodies.
What Gabby said reminded me of the book I'd been reading at the time of our conversation. I shared with her the premise of the book, that we're not the thoughts that pop up in our heads, those voices that tell us all these different stories. We are the one who notices, the one who recognizes those voices. Gabby then added that she had seen a similar idea on an Instagram account she follows. I went to the Instagram page she mentioned and found a video of the creator, Elise. This is what Elise says in the video. You are not your thoughts. Your thoughts are simply words in your head.
And what she talks about is that thoughts are to the brain as sounds are to the ears. Okay, so a sound comes and a sound goes. I can attend to one sound and then I can choose to stop attending to that sound and attend to another. Right now, I can attend to the sound of my own voice. And now I can attend to the like whoosh sound I hear in my headphones. And then if I move side to side, I can attend to the sound of my chair moving, right? But the idea is you have the power to choose where you want to point your metaphorical flashlight. And even if, you know, there's all these sounds or all these thoughts coming at you, they're not you. They're just fleeting experiences.
By now, I'm sure you're convinced that one, it's normal to feel different emotions, including anxiety. And two, we shouldn't try to ignore, deny, or fix our anxiety so it will just go away. But how do we put everything that Gabby has said into practice? What does it look like to recognize, label, accept, and fully embody the anxious feelings that may arise? Well, I asked Gabby if she would be willing to coach me through some anxious feelings I had during our conversation, and she absolutely agreed. Yay! If you've been listening to this podcast for some time, you know I like to get vulnerable here. So I'm going to let you listen in on how Gabby guided me and helped me connect with the anxiety I was experiencing. Oh, and a little disclaimer here. This was coaching, not therapy. Legally, as of the time of this episode, Gabby is only licensed to practice therapy in the state of California. So she cannot engage in therapy with me as I'm not in California. I just had to throw this out there so everyone knows that what happened was not going against any laws. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's take a listen.
So first of all, Lena, I'd like to invite you to just start becoming aware of where the anxiety is in your body, okay? So, and while you're doing this, I want you to just observe non-judgmentally and start to label, okay? So what are you feeling in your body?
I'm feeling tense.
Where?
In my, like, chest and throat, and probably also, like, in my lower abs. In my lower abdomen. Uh-huh. And also I would probably say that maybe some shakiness in my hands.
Okay. So starting with the tension, you said it kind of in your neck and chest area, right? Yeah. Okay. Where do you feel more of the tension? More towards the left side of your body, more towards the right side of your body?
Let's see. So it's kind of hard to tell. I would say maybe more on the left side.
Maybe more on the left side. Okay. Yeah. If you feel okay doing it, maybe you can place a hand kind of over on towards the left side, right up by your neck or your chest, or even one on your low abdomen and one on your chest if that feels okay for you. If this anxiety, this tension had a color, what color would it be?
I'm thinking like, I don't know, a dark red.
Like a dark red. A dark red. Yeah. Okay. Just dark red that you see flowing through kind of your throat and your chest. What about if there was like a symbol or an object that sort of represented this tension? That was sort of like, if you could imagine or visualize living in your body, what is that object or symbol?
Probably something sharp. Yeah, something pointy. like the first thing that came to mind is like a pencil, like a sharp, pointy pencil that like feels like super uncomfortable to hold in your hand. Like it's annoying, but like you have to hold on to it. You can't let it go, but it's annoying. Like to hold on to it, it feels uncomfortable and it's like pointy and sharp and it's like scary.
How's the sensations in your body right now? Are they getting better, worse, staying the same?
I think it's getting better now that I'm like saying this to you out loud.
That's okay. How are your legs? Are they shaking?
No.
No, legs are not shaking. Okay. So right now you're connecting to the anxiety by labeling where it is, by describing what it looks like, right? If you were to visualize it, and you're connecting to it by touching that area of your body as well. Yeah. I wonder if you could add even a little bit more comfort to this sensation, what that would look like for you right now. It could be anything. Feel free to stand up, feel free to move. Just add comfort here. I noticed that you started to sway side to side.
Yeah. And I'm rubbing my lower ab area on the left side.
Okay. So some rubbing and some swaying. Good. Stay with that. And as you do this, I just want you to notice, of course, where the anxiety is in the body, but also notice other parts about your body that might not feel anxious and that might be feeling neutral or comfortable. And allow any emotion that needs to come up to come up as you comfort the anxious feelings. That might also create feelings of safety in your body that might allow you to be vulnerable with yourself. So just notice and track sensations, swaying side to side. Notice whichever sensation is most obvious to you. And then when you notice that, shift your attention onto another sensation that you're becoming aware of, but maybe weren't focused on initially. I hear you breathing a little bit more deeply, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're nodding, just like a gentle nod. How does that feel, the gentle nod and these kind of deeper breaths?
It feels good. Like, and I even felt like I could, like right now, I'm like letting my neck drop, you know, kind of like just letting go whatever like tension might be like in my neck, just like,
yeah. you're not trying to hold yourself up anymore. You're not trying to hold yourself up. You're allowing yourself to just sort of flop over if you have to.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. I'm flopping and it's nice.
You're flopping and it's nice. Yeah. Kind of imagining that the anxiety you store in your body is very exhausting.
Yes, that's probably why I'm all flopped over, because I just feel like I'm starting to like chill.
Yeah. Like you're sort of informing anxiety that you can be here, but chill can be here too. Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to challenge you for a moment to think about or consider an emotion that's sort of opposite to anxiety. What do you imagine, you know?
Carefree.
Carefree, girl. Carefree. That's the part of so many anxious individuals that is exiled. Okay. Carefree. So I want you to just take your time with this. But slowly, one body part at a time, one breath at a time, I want you to start shifting your position to embody carefree. Imagine that you're a sculpture in an art museum and you're titled Carefree.
Oh.
And maybe there's even little notes surrounding this sculpture that sort of point to the inside to describe what the sculpture is also experiencing internally. Carefree. So again, take your time. You can be a moving statue as well. You don't have to be still. You can be an animated statue. There's a big smile across your face, and I see you kind of swaying and wiggling. Yes, arms up in the air, excitement. The carefree part of you has a very, like, combination of excited, sassy.
Exactly.
Relaxed. Yeah, she's got some sass. Okay, okay. Yeah, she's spicy.
I love it.
Yeah. So tell me about what this is feeling like for you. Describe to me what you're noticing in your body right now.
I'm noticing that, like, I just feel like jello, like in a good way. Like, just so, like, just not tense at all. Like, I just feel like gelatinous. Like, my shoulders are back. I'm yawning. Like, it just feels like, oh, like I said, carefree, kind of like, I am not thinking of anything in this world right now. Like, I don't even care how crazy I look. I might look to Gabby right now. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm just, I feel like, my throat doesn't feel tight. Like, I'm like, it feels like I can just sing, like, no.
I love it so much.
Especially you said, like, the statue. Like, I just, like, imagine myself just, like, oh, like, just confidence. Like, hey, everyone's looking at me. I am who I am. My body's how it is, and I don't give a poop what you mm-hmm. think. You came to the museum to look at me, okay?
Mm-hmm. That's right. You're welcome. Yes. And jello. Yes. The movements are definitely giving jello. I feel that for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then, so then you're able to laugh. You're able to yawn. Yawning is a good sign, right? Parasympathetic, you know, nervous system activated means rest and digest. You know, I struggled for a straight, I would say, year and a half to yawn. My nervous system was chronically dysregulated. And I could neither take in a deep breath, nor could I yawn. And I would try so hard, and it would get really frustrating that I couldn't breathe like that or yawn. And so when clients do yawn, that's a good sign. That's yeah.
Yay.
it's demonstrating that your body knows it's safe enough to rest.
Present day Lena jumping in real quick. Pay attention to the next thing Gabby says.
Well, I would just say that your breaths deepened, right? On their own. They deepened. I didn't tell you to take a deep breath.
You're right. You didn't.
No, I wouldn't. The goal is connection over correction. When we start telling ourselves, take a deep breath, or we tell someone else, take a deep breath, what we're doing is we're correcting them, right? We're correcting the way somebody is breathing. That is not what an anxious person needs. An anxious person already knows that they're not breathing deep. They already are aware of that. You know, anxiety doesn't equal unawareness, like it and just like pure irrationality. It equals I don't feel safe, right? So connection over correction. That's what we want to do. We connect to the sensations. We describe them. We make those sensations to feel seen. We comfort those sensations without trying to correct them for being there, right? And in doing that, you already experienced a sense of groundedness. Literally, your legs stopped shaking, right? Without you even noticing. I didn't tell you to bring your legs to stillness, right? Your legs brought themselves to stillness. So we don't need to tell an anxious person what to do to get rid of the anxiety. What we need to do is help an anxious person connect to those anxious feelings in a more observant and supportive manner.
How freaking cool was that? It's like Gabby pointed out. She never once told me to take deep breaths. At a certain point, my body just did it on its own. She also never told me to calm down or stop moving the anxious parts of my body. Again, at a certain point, my body just did it on its own. Gabby speaks about connection versus correction. I never heard it put that way before, but it's so clear to me. Our bodies are intelligently designed, which is something I'm trying to remember to thank God for in my daily prayers. Who are we to think we should tell our intelligent bodies what they should and shouldn't do?
We think we're so big and bad. We think we're so big and bad. Our brains are so phenomenal. They're phenomenal. And yes, as conscious human beings, like, okay, so cool. But we give our brains more credit than they deserve. Like, the body needs more credit. The body stores the wisdom. And there's actually, you know, more nerve endings that travel up from the body to the brain, right? These sensory neurons, than there are the other way around, right? So if I can engage my body and use that to signal my brain that things are not okay and things are okay right now, right? Both are true. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people who come to therapy are working towards. It's integrating these opposites, right? That I can be anxious and I can be carefree. As an example, for myself, just the other night, I was experiencing anxiety in my throat, that lump in my throat. And it gave me this urge to, you know, continue enacting anxious patterns and anxious communication. And I stopped myself for a moment and I practiced what we practiced here. And then I was able to connect with the confidence in my body, which lived on my face. So the lump in my throat stayed right where it was. It didn't go anywhere. Simultaneously, though, my face went from tense and like a furrowed brow to soft, relaxed, confident, and self-assured. So yes, anxiety was here. And then confidence was up here in my face. And knowing that they could both be there helped me to act with intention and not, you know, act out those same sort of anxious communication patterns during a time that was inappropriate. So then these sort of opposing parts can communicate with one another, right? Anxiety in the throat gets to stay and be like, but I'm really worried about dot, dot, dot. And then confidence is there not to say, don't worry, you don't need to worry. But confidence is there to say, yeah, valid that you worry. Meanwhile, I'm up here and I'm not too worried. So I'm not any one thing. I'm both.
I'm so grateful Gabby agreed to come onto the podcast. Not just because we get along and I think she's a baddie, but because she has a way of explaining things that just sticks. I also appreciate how relatable she is when she shares her own experiences with anxiety. Gabby was the first person who taught me about the healing power of giving oneself a hug. That may sound so elementary, but I just didn't know that that was an option for me. I didn't realize I could comfort myself with love and tenderness. Thanks to her, it's something I now do often. Wrap my arms around myself and give myself compassion. Especially when I'm experiencing thoughts of worthlessness. Anyway, if you're interested in finding out more about Gabby, you will find more information about her in the show notes. Speaking of the show notes, you will find some other resources that relate to the topics discussed in this episode. You might find the additional resources helpful. If you've listened to my past episodes that feature guests, you know I enjoy sharing a takeaway that I have gathered from my conversations with them. I would like to do the same in this episode. The biggest takeaway from my conversation with Gabby is this. Anxiety is not bad. It's simply just one of the many emotions that we experience as humans. Let's not try to correct the anxiety we feel or the anxiety others may be feeling. Instead, let's learn to connect with it in an intentional and helpful way. Thank you for listening to Guidance Grove. I hope the insights shared today can serve you along your journey. Until next time, this is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets.
Thank you for joining us on Streets of Our Lives. As you navigate your journey, remember that every step brings healing. When obstacles come your way, don't give up. Keep moving forward. Please note, the information shared on this podcast is for inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice. We encourage you seek professional guidance for any specific concerns.